It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot. He might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility. You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fly gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
This is The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan as I come to you from Fenway Park in Boston, Massachusetts. Marathon Monday, Patriots Day here down in Boston. Red Sox wrapping up a six-game homestand to begin their season here at Fenway Park with the annual 11 a.m. game against the Baltimore Orioles. Sox have been playing better baseball as of late after a tough start to the season, and so much going on with Boston sports. The segment of the show brought to you by Loudoun Country Club. Matt is not with us on the program today, but we have a ton of Boston sports coming in your direction as we start with the Boston Celtics as they win game one of their opening round series against the Indiana Pacers 84-74 in Boston. The Bruins and the Maple Leafs taking part in a series as well. And we have a number of athletes who are now in the big time who played in New Hampshire coming your way on the program today, as well as former Fisher Cats Rowdy Tellez and Danny Jansen on the program, and former Manchester Monarch Jake Muzzin, who is a key defenseman for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But as I mentioned, we'll start, despite being here at Fenway Park, with the Boston Celtics. Celtics 84-74 winners in Game 1 of their opening round series against the Indiana Pacers. And this was a series that the Celtics knew they were going to get tested, and they certainly did in Game 1. They were able to open up a big lead in the second half of play, but the Boston Celtics were certainly challenged in the first half of play as the Pacers were able to open up a double-digit lead at times. Every shot, every rebound, every loose ball, every pass was very, very difficult for the Celtics, but they found themselves. Al Horford coming to life, facilitating. Marcus Morris hitting big shots. Jason Tatum with three-pointers down the stretch. A great, great victory for the Boston Celtics in game number one. So let's hear right now from Celtics head coach Brad Stevens on Morris's performance.
I thought he did a really good job, and we need him to. I mean, I thought he played big and strong and rebounded the ball for us on the defensive end. And then he's a hard guy to guard with bigs because he spreads the floor for you.
More from Stevens in a moment. Also, let's hear from Kyrie Irving on the Celtics' win in Game 1.
Defensively, I knew that our length, our versatility were going to be a positive for us, especially in this series. We know them very well. We played them four times throughout the year. We know each other pretty well. So defensively, I knew we were going to be in the right spots, and it just was just matching that effort.
All right, Kyrie Irving right there. Now a conversation with the head coach of the Boston Celtics, Brad Stevens, who takes us inside this series, a series in which they're playing without Marcus Smart, one of the best defenders in basketball, such an important part of what the Celtics do. Here's my conversation with Brad Stevens. Joined by the head coach of the Boston Celtics, Brad Stevens, as we talk the first-round playoff matchup against the Indiana Pacers. And first, your upshot on this series and obviously the injury to Marcus Smart and how it affects it.
Well, obviously, we've been playing shorthanded, as a number of teams do, throughout a lot of the regular season, and we had hoped to go full health into the playoffs, but not to be, and feel bad for Marcus, and we'll have to create a way and a group that plays well together without him.
How do you kind of assess doing that, given his unique abilities as a player, as a defender? And, is it just looking and kind of trying to find pieces that work during the course of the series?
We can't ask anybody else to be Marcus. Other guys bring other strengths to the table. We're sore with those. And, collectively and, mostly collectively, we have to make up for his presence defensively. Then on the offensive end of the floor, we just ask whoever fills in to soar with what they do best.
Danny was talking before about how he saw this group going into the postseason and that the established urgency of obviously being your season being over if you lose a series is going to help this team a lot, he thought, in that the urgency wasn't there perhaps during the regular season because that finality was not there. Do you agree with that?
I don't know if it was as much urgency as it was just getting used to having everybody around. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I've said many times, asking guys to take a lesser role is really easy for everybody to talk about. It's really hard to be the guy that has to do it. And we had a lot of people in that boat. And ultimately, I think there was some adjustment there. I think that we obviously showed that we were inconsistent from just a team standpoint. But I do feel like the most connected we've been and at our best spot is right now. And that's what we're supposed to be.
Yeah, I completely agree with that just from a watching it standpoint. And it seems like, you know, whether it's Jalen, Gordon, the individuals that you were asking that sacrifice of, it seems like they've found their niches within the group.
Sometimes you have to go through that tough stuff to really get galvanized. And that's one of the reasons why, like, as we were going through some of our real droughts, you know, we just had to stay the course. You know, I talked to a really good friend of mine who's a coach that used to quote Chuck Daly and said, sometimes, you know, through seasons like this, you just have to land the plane. Mm-hmm. And now we get a chance to play in the playoffs. It's too bad we don't get to with full health, but we've got, you know, plenty of guys that are hungry and eager to get going.
What do you look for from Kyrie as an individual that can affect the game almost in like any player we've seen? Is he best when he is a part of the offense, or where he is, you know, the offense, where he is establishing himself on each and every possession, or where he's getting the ball to Al up top, the ball's moving around and he's an option as opposed to the dominant force?
Well, he's going to have plenty of opportunities to be, you know, to be our go-to and be the guy with the ball and everything else. But at the same time, teams are going to pay a lot of attention to him. And Indiana will pay a lot of attention to him. They're good with all their coverages. They're very solid in what they do. They're extremely well coached. And so then it just becomes about making the right basketball play. So it's not about, like, you know, what people perceive you have to be, right? It's about making the next right play over and over and over. He's really good at it. And, you know, a career high in assists this year was a big deal. He made the right read over and over.
What I love about this Indiana matchup is that they are very similar to your Celtics teams of the past, where they do everything right and they require excellence from the opposition. So it's a really good playoff test for you guys, and that their habits are going to force you to have good habits, in my view.
Super physical, super tough, don't beat themselves. Do what they do and do it extremely hard. You know, like if you relax on one of their cuts out of the corner, you're dead. Mm-hmm. If you aren't perfect in your technique on a high pick and roll, you're dead. They just take advantage of you if you're not solid. And so, you know, playing them the last 2 weeks, certainly the game at our place where I thought both teams played well, you know, is a great example of it's going to be really difficult.
Jason Tatum has been a lot more aggressive in getting to the basket, looking for his shot here down the stretch. What are you looking for him, and what do you need from him in the postseason?
We just need him to be himself. I think one of the things that everybody tells, you know, these guys, they want him to get to the line more, they want to do this, they want to do that. You need to be who you are and do it well, and that's it. I do think that he can drive the ball and find his spots to get to the rim, but I don't think that he should pass up you know, wide open catch and shoot threes to do it, you know, just to get four more free throws. So just make the right play. It's just like what I said with Kyrie. Make the right play over and over, and everything else takes care of itself.
Brad, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Sweet.
Brad Stevens right there. Also talked with Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics as he looks to push forth a big series. He had 15 points for the Celtics in game one.
Brad's talked a lot about how the regular season is going to be a good experience for you guys and the challenges you're going to face in the postseason. Do you believe that as well, that you turn in the page, but the experiences that you've had are going to create an environment where you're going to have success?
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of ups and downs throughout the regular season that, you know, just, you know, form who you are as a team, you know, when you start the playoffs and ready to take on new challenges.
It seems like you found a good place at the end of the year as well. How are you feeling about where your game is at going into the postseason?
Feeling really good. Just trying to stay fresh and be consistent at this time of the season.
And Brad also mentioned the fact that he wants you to be you throughout the course of the postseason. What does that mean to you, and how do you see yourself wanting to impact things?
You know, I just look at, you know, me last year from the playoffs and just come out with the same aggression and same intensity every night, because every game is very important.
Do you think that that benefit is probably the biggest that you can have, knowing what it's like to have that weight on you and knowing how you can achieve success in doing so?
Yeah, just having a year of experience in the playoffs definitely helps more than it will hurt you. So, I'm excited to get out there today.
To get a look at the Pacers side of things, I talked with Domantas Sabonis.
What do you see as being the biggest keys for you guys in this series? You're obviously a great effort and intensity team. What do you have to do to have success in this series?
I think we've got to play a whole 48 minutes. You know, that's been our struggle all year. We have some lapses during the game. And Boston is really good in transition. You know, we got to cut those easy transition points.
How do you think this group has changed with Victor's injury? Everyone expected you guys to completely fall off the face of the earth, but you guys have been really good since then. What has been the key for you guys in staying together?
Just next man up. You know, everybody stepped up. You know, we've had injuries all year, and rookies came in, G League guys. You know, everybody stepped up, and we're just a group of guys that want to win.
Everyone focuses in these series on the best player on the court, and obviously that's Kyrie. Do you look at the Celtics and say, oh, Kyrie is the biggest problem, or Kyrie is going to get his, and it's the rest of the guys that could create difficulty? You know, they go off, then we have problems.
They're a very talented team. They got many weapons. You know, you got to make sure you got to keep everyone. You know, one night it could be Kyrie, next night it could be someone else. You know, so. It's a team effort to stop everybody.
When you watch, you know, the first games around the playoffs and you see the Magic do what they did, the Nets do what they did, and the Spurs beat Denver, does that change anything for you guys? Do you get more confidence from that, or is that just different?
Oh, I think not really. No, we all have the same mentality since we found out our matchup. You know, we've been preparing for them, and our mentality is the same, you know, come out and get a win. We treat every game the same.
You're a guy that can create a lot of matchup problems for the Celtics in this series. How do you view your role, and how excited are you to see what you can do in the series?
You know, I'm just going to come out and be aggressive. My job's been always leading the second unit, and that's what I'm going to try and do, you know, bring energy and help the team win.
So let's go down the path of Celtics playoff history. 17 NBA championships for this franchise. Larry Bird was in the house for game one. I talked with the man who has seen and knows more Celtics basketball than any individual, Tommy Heinsohn.
No one knows this franchise's history from firsthand experience like you do. When you think of the legendary moments in Celtics playoff history, what comes to mind? What's the most important moments, the kind of turning point moments this franchise has had?
Well, the first championship came in 1957. And it was a double overtime. Then there were some memorable games like Russell's last year with the balloons and Bird's era, making shots, you know, calling the shots. Games with Bird, the shootout with Bird and Dominique. Watching KG. Well, actually, teams I coached, I mean, a triple overtime game, too.
Yeah.
And Havlicek and Collins and JoJo and Silas, all terrific, aggressive players.
Hey, how are you?
And when we get to the 08 team, you know, the pure joy they had in winning it. And last year's team was pretty interesting. You know, I went up to Jaylen Brown after the season. And I said to him, all the guys I ever played with or coached, they would love to play with you guys.
Yeah, that was,
they were playing the right way.
Yeah, that was a really special group because of how they defied the odds. I'm interested in particularly the 57 team where you look at it in retrospect and you're like, okay, Bill Russell won 11 of 13 championships. But at some point it had to start, just like it has to start for this group with Kyrie. So kind of how is a championship team born? Your 70s team, you know, the same thing. You had to start, obviously, in 74. How is a championship identity kind of born amongst a group?
Well, I mean, the teams I played with, they were all very, very competitive people, number one. And Red really drafted people that had some kind of championship background, who had an idea of what winning was all about and how to do it. And when I coached, the guys that I coached were all competitive people too. a very aggressive. I think Bird's team, all those guys were. I mean, Bird was the master of telling people what he was going to do and then do it, you know. So it was a different type of basketball than when I played. Teams I played on, the stars were the most humble of the players. When things are going wrong, they would open themselves up to criticism from their teammates. Something that I would imagine being very difficult in this era.
That's a huge point because, you know, you think about the weight that the star player has. And there's great players and then there's star players. And you were obviously a great player. But the weight that the Bill Russell, that the Larry Bird has, that Kyrie has with this group. And what did they have to do in order for the team to be successful? Because it's Hall of Fame players around Bill Russell and Larry Bird. But the other guys are integral in order for the team to be successful.
Well, you know, you have to weigh winning against your own personal interests. And that's what it boils down to. So if you're used to winning and understand you'd rather win than lose. So when I hit on competitive people, that's the main reason. All right, competitive people want to win. So there's a better chance of them cooperating and fulfilling a role than trying to be, you know, garner the best stats in the world.
Final thing, at what point was, in your view, the Celtics as this championship preeminent basketball franchise born? Was there after a particular title, you mentioned the first one, was there a particular title where you're like, okay, we have established something that is uniquely special and is not going to be really replicated?
Well, 11 in 13 years.
Right.
And 8 in a row.
But like after the fifth, was it after you accomplished all of it that you realized what you had done?
I don't get it.
So like after the third championship, did you think of what the team was in terms of historical context, or was it in retrospect?
Just went out and played every year. I wanted to win. I mean, it wasn't a matter of setting up. I mean, we set out our goal to win. But, you know, we knew we had a great basketball team if we played the way we could play. And we ended up with the best offense, the best defense. Revolutionized the game. Really created the interest in pro basketball. I mean, people thought the leprechaun was living in a building, you know.
Tommy Heinsohn right there also talked with Celtics radio broadcaster and 1984 NBA Finals MVP Cedric Maxwell. Talking Celtics playoff history, and to you, what do you think about, what memories come about when you think of the Celtics and the playoffs, and how do you feel when this gets started, the second season?
Well, the second season is always the most important season. If you're a Boston Celtic fan, it's all about winning the banner. You can win as many playoff games as you want to. You can win as many divisions as you want to. But with this organization, it's about winning championships, and that's how it goes.
Through the decades, is there a commonality amongst the championship teams, the Pierce Garnett teams, your teams in the 80s, you know, Bill Russell's teams, that bring those teams together and make them championship teams?
Well, teams that always believe. Perseverance, dedication, courage, just stubborn and believing that they could win at any time.
So those things are still to be determined about this group, in my view. Mm-hmm. Is that rare for a team to come into the postseason not knowing where they're at in terms of the courage and the dedication? Do you find it at times in the postseason?
Well, I think that's what some teams are made of. You know, every team has not won a championship. You think about Larry Bird's first championship team, you did not know how that team was going to perform. So I think that, you know, for them to go, for us to go down to Philadelphia and have to come back, being down 3-1 hadn't been done before. And that was about being courageous and believing that, you know, you could get it done. So your legend comes in the playoffs.
Are there positives to be drawn from the regular season in that ways that this team has been tested and the challenges that they've had. They're playing their best basketball down the stretch. No Smart, though, and that's obviously a big factor because he's that heart and soul guy, that closer.
Yeah, he's heart and soul defensively. You would love to have him, but I think you have enough right now in the tank to win until he gets back. Every guy has to step up and take another role. And if he's your best defender, somebody else has to step up and take his role.
Following what we've seen in the playoffs so far with all the road upsets, how does that affect this group? Does that change the trajectory of things? Say, oh, wow, the Raptors fall to the Magic. Maybe there's not as much separation as the standings would indicate.
Not really. I think that what you have to do is just believe that you can win. And at the end of the day, that's all.
Also talked with the Celtics, Semi Ojeleye.
The injury comes opportunity, and obviously with Marcus's injury, probably more opportunity for you in this series. How are you approaching that?
Same way I approach every game this year. I mean, I approach it like I'm going to play and then let whatever happens happen.
How challenging has that been for you? Because you've had a really good year. You've shown it in practice. You've shown it when you've played. But the depth of this roster has indicated that you haven't gotten the play time.
Right. I mean, that's part of it. You know, it's still a great opportunity. I'm so blessed to be here. And, I just have to keep working and control what I can control.
Do you feel like as the group, it's kind of the same thing where it's postseason. Everything in the past is the past. Mm-hmm. Now there's opportunity for you and there's kind of a new beginning here right here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think everybody has that chance to really show what we're made of and come together, and it's time to do what we wanted to do all year. So I think the regular season's ended, and now it's 0-0. So we'll see what happens.
When you look at the Pacers, they're a team that's very much like you. They play hard, they're physical, they're aggressive, they're going to scrap for everything that they can. What type of a challenge does that present for this group? And in a lot of ways, is it a good test for you guys that you're going to get pushed physically in every way possible in this series?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, they really emulate what a playoff atmosphere is like every single night. They did that throughout the year. When we saw them during the regular season. So I think playing a team like this will really test us and really show we're made up.
Do you see yourself being the player on this roster who is able to most replicate what Marcus is able to bring on the defensive end?
You can't replace what Marcus brings, but I think everybody watches him, and I definitely try to learn as much as I can from how physical he is, how much he cares, just how passionate he is. I think that's the thing you can't replace, is his heart.
And that's something that really stands out, is he does extra on each play. Like, he's going to fight for each rebound. He does not give up on a play. And is that something that you see yourself being able to bring as well?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, when I get out there, I know I have to make that impact in some way. So whatever it has to be, whether it's grabbing a rebound, just playing hard, I think that's what I try to do. And, it ends up rewarding you in the long run.
Sweet. Thanks, Jimmy. Yeah.
This is The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us for the show. This segment has been brought to you by Loudoun Country Club. Great golf closer than you think. LoudounCC.com.
We are at Fenway Park in Boston here on Marathon Monday as it's Patriots Day in Massachusetts. The running of the Boston Marathon, one of the great days in sports in Boston. It's always great to have the Celtics and Bruins playing at this time of year as well, and that is certainly the case. The Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs, as we do this show here on Monday, tied at a game apiece after an incredibly convincing 4-1 victory for the Boston Bruins in Game 2 at TD Garden after they lost Game 1 by that same score. Bruins were physical. They created opportunity after opportunity. Frederik Andersen, the Leafs netminder, was very, very good for them in that contest. Here's Bruins netminder Tuukka Rask.
It was important. I mean, it's playoffs, so every inch matters, every shift matters. So you kind of have to establish that momentum and physicality after every shift.
Chris Wagner was a big key for the Bruins with his physicality.
I think it energizes the bench more than anything. We didn't want to chase hits by any means, but it kind of builds momentum and gets the crowd into it, which you have to play into when you're playing at home.
Here's Bruins defenseman Charlie McAvoy.
Playoffs, regular season, any game, really, you want to jump out on top. You want to throw the first punch. That being said, sometimes it doesn't really matter unless you follow it up and play the right way.
David Backes returned to the lineup in Game 2 and had a strong performance for the Bruins. He was a healthy scratch in Game 1. He scored the first goal in Game 2.
We had some great performances by guys that are typically labeled as skill guys that were willing to put the effort and the fortitude into playing a hard game tonight, and that's what we're looking for. That's what we got.
So Jake Muzzin, a big part of the Toronto Maple Leafs, he had spent
all the previous years of his NHL career with the Los Angeles Kings after coming through their organization and playing several years with the Manchester Monarchs, where I got to know him well back when I was Monarchs broadcaster when they were in the American Hockey League. And I talked with Jake Muzzin about his impact on this series and the move from L.A. to Toronto.
Just for you, being in this opportunity here with the Leafs after being with the Kings for so long, mm-hmm. obviously it was a difficult change for you of that group, but how has the adjustment been and how much are you enjoying this?
It's been a good adjustment. I've said earlier when I first came and throughout this whole process is it makes it easier when you come to a good team, when you have good guys and, you know, good coaching and good plan. There's new personalities, new faces, new systems, but when you have a good system and a good team, it just makes the transition a lot smoother. So I've been fortunate to come to a good team here and have an opportunity to make a run here.
And plus you're an X factor with this group, just like Tavares, a figure that can obviously make a difference for this group in making that sustained run. What is that like in coming into a new surrounding where there's that type of a feeling about what you're trying to do?
It helps, you know, with me and Johnny been here all year and I'm coming in a little bit later, but two experienced guys that have been in playoff situations, have played a good amount of games now and understand what it takes to get it done. So we're excited to be here, obviously, and we have an exciting young team, and hopefully we can help where we can.
Your sister in this contest is kind of what you do in creating opportunity, getting the puck to the net. And how much is that aspect of kind of keeping the game simple and for this group going to help things out?
Yeah, it's, you know, playoff hockey, there's not a lot of pretty goals. I mean, although we had one tonight, but
real pretty well.
Yeah, a lot of times it's just pucks to the net, deflections, rebounds, screens, stuff like that off someone's shin pad and in. So it's kind of, you know, been my game is just getting pucks to the net and causing some havoc in front, and we resulted in a goal tonight. So we got to continue with it. Be smart with our shots. Continue going.
Last year the Bruins were perhaps the more physical team in this series. That's another one of your attributes, and it seemed like tonight you guys were the more physical group. Do you feel like that's sustainable throughout the course of the series, where you guys can be the more physical group consistently?
I think we're a fast team, and when we check and play with speed, that's kind of like where our physicalness comes from, is just swarming them with good checking. We have some guys who can hit, and you know, but we don't need to be running out of position to make hits. If they come, they come. But I like to think that we're a physical team by checking and playing fast.
That's Jake Muzzin. This is The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the program. We're at Fenway Park Marathon Monday here in Boston, Massachusetts. Red Sox with the annual early game. And we're going to take a look at the Boston Red Sox right now and start with World Series MVP Steve Pierce. As Pierce played left field right before our interview, I guess right after our interview, he was informed he was not going to be DH. He was moving out to left field. Pedroia dealing with a little bit of knee stuff. And Christian Vasquez playing second base for the Red Sox today. So some moves for the Red Sox as they wrap up their home series to begin the season here against the Baltimore Orioles. Let's talk right now with the World Series MVP, Steve Pierce.
Steve, do you feel like the team has turned the corner after winning three out of the last four, the way you guys have been playing, better pitching? It seems like the club has come around. Plus, we're looking at what Seattle's doing, what Oakland are doing. Those are pretty good ball clubs you played on the road to start the season.
Yeah, those are great teams. There's no denying that. You know, that's what we said from the beginning. You know, those are two good teams, and we went out there and, you know, beginning of the year, new time zone. You know, it was tough. They're a good team, but you know, we got back on our feet. We're a good team. You know, it's only a matter of time before we start playing our baseball.
How do you feel, and what do you look for when a team is playing better ball? Just more consistency up and down the lineup, the starting pitching. And is there also something that is just kind of an overall feel of, oh, okay, this is going in the direction that we want, that's kind of not a tangible thing?
It's just looking for fight. Yeah. Playing together. You know, at the beginning, like, we're either hitting or not pitching, or pitching and not hitting. Now it seems like everything's starting to come together. So we just started off slow and But, you know, there were games where, yeah, at the beginning of the season where it was, we were down, it was kind of hard to come back. But, you know, the last couple losses that we've had, that we've been down, but we've fought.
Yeah.
And to come back, make them games. So that was really the best piece I've taken from how our team is.
Yeah, the Toronto game, the second game that you guys came back and won, that seemed like one of the bigger celebrations I've seen from this group, and that obviously was a big win for you guys in finally getting reward for the type of bats you're putting together.
Yeah, and it's a matter of time. It's still, we're so early into the season. I mean, you know, it's. I mean, last year, you know, we started off. You know, everything was firing on all cylinders. You know, I mean, that's what you hoped would happen. You know, hope would happen. You know, this year too, but. You know, it's just different. It's a new season. We didn't start off the way we wanted to, but we know what kind of team we are. You know, we're just going to stay within ourselves. We're not changing anything, and we're going to go out there and we're going to compete every single day, and we'll let the statistics and the record take care of itself.
I'm curious about your routine to stay ready on a game-in, game-out basis and how far, you know, you look ahead. And you know, do you look ahead to the starting pitching matchup, as an example, two lefties in New York, and obviously there's a very good chance you're going to play in those games. Is there, how does your kind of your prep process work so that you're ready in a game-in, game-out basis? Today, you're DHing, played first base yesterday, and you move around in addition to obviously being in and out of the lineup.
Yeah. You know, it starts with leadership. You know, Alex did a great job of communicating. He'll give us a text message the day before, let us know we're playing, so we're mentally prepared when we come to the park. And, you know, that having been said, you know, we take care of it. We come here, we prepare, we hit, we practice, and we just, you know, we play when we're called upon. Just to come in off the bench, we come in off the bench. But, you know, it starts with Alex. You know, he did a great job letting us know ahead of time.
Finally, how much do you carry with you, you know, away from the ballpark when things are going well or things are going, you know, poorly? And how do you manage that with obviously a family, other responsibilities, and in life when things are going well or bad, like it tends to carry over? Are you able to compartmentalize and just leave the ballpark stuff here, or when things are not going well, does it kind of, you know, manifest in other aspects of your life?
You know, we are human. You know, sometimes when you have a bad day at work, sometimes you do bring it home, but... You know, the best way, you know, it's a lot easier said than done, but, you know, you have to flush it. You know, today is a new day. Nobody cares about what you did yesterday. You know, you have to come prepared and ready to compete, you know, day in, day out, at bat to at bat. You got to find ways to flush. You know, this is a game of failure. You know, you're going to fail a lot more than you succeed, so you got to be able to flush and just keep moving forward.
That is Steve Pierce right there. Blake Swihart was behind the dish today as he got off to a really good start and has gotten off to a good start this season, particularly with the bat. Red Sox, of course, making the decision to go with Swihart behind the plate instead of Sandy Leon, who is now in Pawtucket. Here is my conversation with Blake. Just talk about what the start of the season's been like for you and the type of groove you've been in at the plate and some of the things that have led to that.
No, I mean, just kind of taking everything from spring training and sticking with my approach and not trying to do too much and just get a pitch I can handle.
Is this the most comfortable you've felt, you know, with the Red Sox?
I mean, I've always felt pretty comfortable, but just going out there and, you know, doing anything I can to help the team win, you know, that's our job right now. And, you know, I mean, I just got to try to keep putting good swings on the ball.
From the catching side of things, what are you trying to work on that aspect of things? And also, you know, Christian has talked about this too, where obviously when the pitchers aren't going well, there's a weight. Veritek's talked about this a lot in his career. There's a weight that falls on the catcher. Do you feel that as well?
No, I mean, as a catcher, you take pride in what the pitcher's doing out there on the mound. So, I mean, we're back there, you know, grinding with them, and you know, we're making the decisions together on pitches, certain on pitch calling and everything. So, you know, we take that with pride, and, you know, it kind of falls on us too.
Do you feel like the grind at this point is going to, given the talent that these pitchers have and that you guys have, that the grind is going to lead to something that is going to be even better than what you expect?
Yeah, I mean, you look around the locker room, you look at the names and the stuff they've done, like they have it. And, you know, I don't think anybody in the locker room is really worried. You know, we're going to start clicking, and as a team, we're going to be better.
That's Blake Swihart. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, this segment of the show. Brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at nhlawoffice.com. Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan at Fenway Park as the Red Sox began the home season with a series against the Toronto Blue Jays as well as against the Baltimore Orioles. When the Blue Jays came in, that meant some former New Hampshire Fisher Cats who have been in New Hampshire very recently. And that includes Rowdy Tellez, who's been off to a great start for the Fisher Cats, playing first base, DHing, and really hitting the ball well.
Do you feel like this is kind of home for you now? Is there kind of that comfort level that's set in where the Blue Jays is where you're at? Or is there still kind of the feelings of needing to kind of impress?
There's no room for complacency in any walk of life. I think once you get to that point, that's where you start going backwards. So, I just try to come out here every day and do the best I can with what they want me to do, you know, whether it's playing first or DHing or, you know, off days coming in to pinch hit or late situations. You know, I try and do the best I can with what they're asking for me. But, I don't try to impress. I just want to go out and have a good season every year and, you know, take it day by day, forget about what I did in the past and focus on what's going on in the moment I can control.
It seems like you've done all of that so far this year, whether it's big pinch hits, whether it's playing first base, you've kind of found a role for yourself with this group. What's that been like, and what's the mindset been like in order to accomplish that?
Like I said, it's just making sure I'm ready for every situation possible. Whether it's playing first, making sure I'm getting all my ground balls in and staying, you know, where I was on defense and where I want to be, making sure I'm getting all my work in, DH, making sure I'm preparing correctly when, you know, I'm in the DH role and understanding what I need to do there. And then as a pinch hitter or defensive replacement, making sure I have everything in order to know exactly what's going on, who's coming in to face me if I'm pinch hitting and what they have and how they face guys like me in certain situations. And if I'm going in on defense, making sure I know who's hitting and what they like to do and their tendencies, and just being ahead of the game before I go out there.
What are the biggest challenges in doing that for a guy that's played, you know, consistently every single day and excelled to a large degree throughout the course of your minor league career and getting to this point? What's the challenges in adapting to kind of a new role?
I don't really think there's a challenge to it. It's just having understanding and being open mind to it and being able to adapt to the situation that I'm being put in. It's like I said, it's just taking every role that comes to me and whatever they want me to do, doing it to the best of my ability.
Have you reached out to other guys that have been in DH roles? You talked in the past about how much you admired David Ortiz and other DHs. Have you reached out to other guys about what they've done to get that routine down?
I wanted to talk to Big Poppy while he was here, but I didn't get the opportunity to. I talked to Hanley Ramirez a little bit when we played Cleveland about his preparation and even what Big Poppy did because he played with him. Me and Nelson Cruz have the same agent, so I've reached out to my agent about trying to get in contact with him. And, you know, he's playing too, obviously, so his schedule's a little busy and he's got a family. And, you know, but I'm just trying to learn as much as I can. Smokey's been helping me. Kendry's helped me last year when I would DH. He would give me some insight on what he did and what he looked for and how he prepared. But, it's almost like testing out to see what you like and
right.
Putting, you know, that into what you need to do. And if you don't like it, you know, do it once. And if you don't like it, kind of throw it away.
Yeah,
kind of that trial and error type situation. So the final thing is, on being here and, you know, the path that you took to get here, is it what you expected? I mean, you've always dreamed of being a big leaguer and having, you know, this kind of consistency here at the big league level. Has it been everything that you expected?
Yeah, I mean, of course it's everything I expected. I prepared my whole life for this, but like I said, once you become complacent, that's when you start going back. So is it what I expected? Yes. But am I accepting the fact that I'm here? No. I'm going to keep going to be everyday player I strive to be, whether it's in DH or first base. Or, I mean, if they need me to play the outfield at some point, God forbid, that I'll get out there. I just want to be in the big leagues for as long as I can. I want to excel for as long as I can, and that's always been my goal. You know, I always said I wanted to be one of the best ever, play first base on both sides of the ball, and I want to be one of the people that everybody remembers, just chubby cheeks and a smile every time you ran on the field.
I'll add one more thing. I remember when you were at Fisher Cats, you were willing to do whatever it took in order to get to the big leagues and to scratch and a claw and get that opportunity. You talked about playing outfield. You talked about, you know, to Meech about that and see if you get outfield glove and go out and to get that opportunity to make it perhaps here with the big glove. Do you think that that type of attitude helps you in this particular moment, in that you weren't expecting to come in and be the everyday first baseman, and then that doesn't happen? It was like, okay, I'm going to scratch and claw and do what it takes, and that mental approach has helped you.
Of course. I mean, I just don't, like I said, complacency or feeling like I already made it, you know, with, you know, a month and a half of service time is something that can't happen. So you know, until the day I stop playing is probably when I'll stop feeling like somebody's always breathing down my back. But, you know, I just want to be here to do the best I can and help out this team win. You know, I feel like we had a good squad, and a lot of people are going to sleep on us. You know, but we're going to come around and we're gonna pick it up, you know. So I'm excited to be here, and I'm just going to fill every role I can.
That is Rowdy Tellez. Also talked with former New Hampshire Fisher Cat Danny Jansen, who's the starting catcher for the Toronto Blue Jays.
So what would it have been like for you here at the start of this season as the starting catcher, taking on that role, and what have been some of the challenges, some of the things you've enjoyed the most about the challenges?
It's been a blast, man. It's been everything that I've ever dreamed of, being the opening day guy and being a starting catcher. And I came in here with one goal, is just to obviously win and learn as much as possible from all the new faces, all the staff coming into the season and stuff, and getting close and have that trust with them right away. And you know, so far it's been awesome. I think the connection that I have with the pitching staff and all the guys has been great.
You guys watched the Red Sox get their rings the other day. What was that experience like in terms of, you know, looking at that and being, oh, this is what we want. This is what we want to move towards.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you hungry just seeing all that. You know, seeing everybody get their ring and the whole city involved, and it was just an atmosphere. It was an amazing atmosphere, and that's what we play for. That's the overall goal, right? And it just makes you hungry for it.
What's Rowdy's impact been this year? He's obviously had big hits, and he's trying to scratch and claw and find his way into that consistent big league role. What has he meant to the group?
Rowdy's a huge part of the group. Rowdy's a good defensive first baseman, and the kid rakes. And you know, I mean, just speaking kind of for, you know, myself and some other guys, you know, it's not exactly where you want to be, but everybody's kind of gritty and grinding, and we're coming together as a group with our swings and kind of playing the game. So Rowdy's been a huge role, and he continue will be.
You guys have had big roles, you and him, in terms of where you've been hitting the lineup this year. You've been up the top of the lineup. You've been fifth. You've been all over the place. And do you feel, and does the organization make you feel like, you know, you and Rowdy are big parts of the future? And they obviously have Bo and Cavan and those guys and Vladdy Jr. coming up. But do you feel like you're a part of that, not just the present, but a big part of the future?
Yeah, I do. You know, I'm grateful for everything that I've been given from this organization and all the challenges they've bestowed in front of me. You know, I'm ready for the challenge, and I'm extremely excited to be here, and extremely excited to keep learning and keep playing. I'm just happy to put on a uniform. But yeah, I think we are big parts of the future, and I think you know, it's what we do here, just learning and trying to better ourselves, just to kind of build up for that.
Well, you know, the game planning process for you, what is that like, and how much do you map out what you want to do prior to the contest in terms of utilizing your starting pitcher's strengths versus the weaknesses and strengths of the opposition?
That's pretty much what it all is. You know, that's a huge thing of preparation. You always, you know, as a catcher, you got to be the most prepared man on the field. That's just how it is. And you know, prior to the game, usually an hour or two, get with the pitching coach, get with Pete, get with the starter. And, you know, before a series, you go over pretty much every hitter. And, you know, the resources that we have with our intel and our guys, you know, matchups when they come in and all that stuff. And, yeah, you got to look at it, and you got to develop a game plan that just comes with reps of it and really just learning yourself.
Take me through how that works. Is that a collaborative process where it's, you know, everybody comes in with their own information and kind of works together? Or is it you're the guy that takes the lead and has the game plan of the pitching coach? And does it vary from pitcher to pitcher?
It does vary. And it is collective, you know, as well. You know, I am the guy that puts it down and
you know, I got probably the most information on the hitters, and I go over the, you know, the hitters probably the most. So, you know, I'm the general back there, and those guys have trust in me, and I have trust in them. So, yeah, you know, it is. And then certain guys do have, you know, with the left, like Tim Mesa or Pinal, and the lefties that come in, they have ways that they want to attack their guys that they're going to be, you know, pitching against. So it is individualized a little bit, but for the most part, it is pretty generalized, and it's collective info.
You also need to know your guy, and, you know, when a guy is shaking you off, is that something that, how do you kind of assess that? Where are you trying to think about what the pitcher wants to do in an instance and match that with the game plan so you don't get shaken off? Or if a guy is shaking you off, you accept that as, okay, this is what he wants to do in this instance?
Definitely, yeah. I'm never a guy that gets upset with guys shaking. You know, he knows himself, and the whole goal is to be on the same game plan. That's how we do all the preparation beforehand. But if a guy's got conviction in any of his pitches, I'm always down for it. I feel like any pitch that the pitcher feels he can convict with conviction or execution is a good pitch.
That is Danny Jansen. This is The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the program as we come to you from Fenway Park. This segment of the program has been presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. For more information, visit prescription-center.com. Great show for you today. We looked at the Celtics and Bruins in the playoffs, and the Boston Red Sox beginning their home season with series against the Toronto Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles here at Fenway Park. Always a special day down here in Boston. Always was prior to, obviously, the events in the Boston Marathon 2013, but even more so after, here in One Boston Day down in Boston, Massachusetts. It's so awesome to be at Fenway Park and watch the runners over the Green Monster run down Commonwealth Ave. And it's truly a special day in Boston. A little bit eerie still to this day, 6 years later. You hear a police siren, you start to think about things, but still, such a special day here in Boston, Massachusetts. Again, you've been listening to Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center.